I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 554. Act like you're from Massachusetts.
Never end any word with I.
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi, everybody.
How you doing?
I'm alive.
That's good. Like,
above a 7. Thought I was going to be a 9 this weekend, and then the man wanted to fuck with me. But
the
whatever.
Man always wants to fuck with you, though.
You know?
Like, you can't be fucking with people.
It'd be like, here's this big juicy carrot that we told you you're gonna get. And then come Friday, you're like, where's my carrot? And it's like, it's a baby carrot.
We got you a plum, though.
I like plums
but
over carrots.
But it's not ripe.
Yeah, so you gotta wait. And it's like, nah, dude.
You said I was gonna have a ready juicy carrot. My beautiful house. This is not my beautiful wife. But whatever. It's cool because at least we're going to be here. Well, no, it's not going to be cool. I was going to say talk about games and stuff and that'll make you happier. But mostly
our topic today is not necessarily.
No, it's not a warm and fuzzy. But hey, I'll end it with some Destiny talk. So that'll cheer you up.
Yeah, sure will. No, for real though, like, I think this will be the week that I actually finally pick it up, because, you know,
thank
life.
The Lord, because.
Life and shit, man, but you know how it is.
Girl, so, I know, you ain't gotta tell me, I'm just saying.
You gotta decide, either.
I'm already
my full
cruising
bill?
Through Endgame, so you're just gonna need to hit me up and I can help you out. I'm gonna
man,
lift you up.
I knew that was gonna happen. Like, story of my fucking life, but anyway.
Well, it's 2 weeks, bro.
I know, I know. Like, I ain't trying to piss in nobody's Cheerios today. I understand where my shortcomings are.
Like, I tried to go back to Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, and the Destiny call was just like, but you need exotics.
So, like,
yeah, I do.
Like, I'm not
Zer
even.
Is here.
You I'm not
the
even.
First Zer.
I'm not even mad. Like, I'm not mad because I understand that it's completely on me. Yep. I'll deal with it, and very much like the first game, I'll get up there eventually, and then it will be fine.
You will get up there really fast. Like, seriously, the wrestle to 20 is much faster than it was in the first game.
Like, it's pretty hilarious that, so my father-in-law is a Destiny junkie, but, I mean, he doesn't listen to my show, so I can say this, because this will never get back to me, but he ain't good. Like, he's at all.
Did you tell him to get good?
Well, no, because, like, he knows, like, I do this show, and he knows I do it with you, and he was just like, you guys could be doing Destiny? I'm like, probably. He's like, are you gonna be, like, live streaming it? Do you, like, need a tank? And I'm like, shit, no. No, we're good. We're totes good. Like,
I mean,
whatever.
Let me be very clear. We will be streaming Destiny 2 gameplay at some point.
No, right, but like, I don't
but
want to tell them that.
But it would be with your husband as our tank and not
possibly.
Your
father-in-law. Right. Well, I mean, like, it's just like, it's a little too much because, like, he's really into it, like, the story and the narrative, which, you know, I'm all about that. Like, I'm great.
And you will but, like this story.
And he was just like, but you know, you get up there and everyone's already in Endgame and they're all pissing and bitching. And I'm like, well, you know, most of the people that you're playing with are like 12 and have like more than 6 hours in their day to dedicate towards grinding and playing where, you know, you're a full grown ass man with a family and a restaurant and a job. So, like, yeah, you're not going to progress as fast as Timmy 12-year-old here. So get over it. Like, it's the nature of the beast. Or you just play your single player. You don't talk to nobody, which, I mean, you can have that existence on Destiny if you want it. But, I mean,
I haven't been on mic yet, in all honesty, in my playthrough. I haven't done any Crucible yet. So I've just been running the campaign. And then after the campaign, I've just been doing patrols and adventures and a hell of a lot of public events, which you can do with other people, you know, just like the game, until you get to the final crucial story point, and then it's only fire team. But public events are like everybody all in the pool, just like before. And so
cannonball bitches, splash splash.
Exactly. Like, I've been playing with other people, but I have not been on mic with anybody.
No.
And that's really what's, I think, made the experience great. Just because, you know, I'm not big enough yet to run the Nightfall or the raid with my clan. So, and those are the—
Wait, you're already in a clan?
Yeah, the clan that we were in before didn't go away, but I joined a different clan. Because it was the Great Schism in the Wolves of Ragna.
Okay. See, I don't know. So, like,
I'm in Girthy Pete's Tasty Meats now.
You know what? Not too sure how I feel about that, bro. But you know what? Like, it's not about how I feel. It's about how you feel. And if those
I
are the type
make
of
the name,
if
okay.
that's the type of meats
I
that you want, then you put
stop.
Those all up
I
in your mouth.
I didn't make the name of the clan.
Hope
but,
you enjoy
like,
those meats once a month coming in that wet ass box with that weird smell. You
yo,
do you, boo boo.
Listen, when the schism happened, okay, and we became like three where we were one, okay, my loyalties were with this one group of.
With the Girthy meats. That's
and
what
so
I heard.
I followed Nick
and his
and
meat.
Nick's like, I'm gonna make a new clan. And I was like, okay.
What?
You know, because Nick is great, so...
Right,
there,
but...
There were quite a few times
what was the name of that again?
Nick would...
Girthy Meats? Someone's Girthy Meats?
Girthy Pete's Tasty Meats.
See? Bro.
Wait. You know how you can only have a four-letter designation that shows up when you're in a clan in the brackets underneath?
Does it say Pete's? Or
no, it says meat.
Like.
But, like, all the heavy hitters from our previous clan are in there. So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna follow them. Because that's gonna make the rating so much better. Because they were really good at leading us through to get the rewards until we were big enough.
Whatever bratwurst, like, floats your boat, man. Like, whatever wet meat you need to get you through.
I'm all about a good prosciutto. And so are you, so don't lie.
Yeah, but I would not join a guild
Bullshit.
Or a clan
Bullshit.
Called Pete's Tasty Meat.
Girthy
like, what kind of meat is it?
Pete's.
Is it
Tasty Meats.
Is it Bologna?
Is it Capricola? They are presented. It's chef's choice.
See, I don't like the idea of guys presenting their meat to me. Like, there's just a certain level here that even I'm like, about.
Oh, don't be hating. Don't be hating.
I'm not, but don't ask me. I cannot join that clan. I can't.
Well, that's going to be a problem for you then, because clan XP is important.
I know it is, but I can't align
you
myself
do know
with
about
somebody's
XP, right?
I've heard about it, yes.
Okay.
But I can't.
Everybody in the clan benefits from the clan.
From Pete's Tasty Meat. Yep, I get it. Get it.
And every individual can earn XP for the clan by running raids, strikes, nightfalls, and public events. So, if you're in the clan, and you got a lot of heavy hitters, them numbers are going to be going up pretty doggone quick.
Yeah.
Like, our clan's already at level 2, and they'll probably crest 3 before midweek. So I'm just like, do it to it, guys! Okay, because like, you've got to be 260 in power, light, whatever you want to call it, in order to do the Nightfall. And that's really, like, the recommended, like, don't go in here unless you're at least that.
All right. Well, no, wait. You got that for raid, you got that for your PS4, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then to do the raid, you got to be 280. Now, I started playing Destiny, and you start there from, you know, the zero.
You don't start from the zero.
You start
clearly, you don't start from the bottom, and now you're here.
Yeah, you do. The intro level of the campaign, Gaul has taken the light, so you have no power, you have weapons, and you have, like, a quarter of your life bar and can die. Zero power. Your armor has zero power. You literally start from zero. And so that's why I say, like, the run to 20 is pretty quick, because the campaign alone will probably get you, if you just critical path the campaign story in single player, you could probably get to 17 or 18 by yourself. So if you took some time out after you're given the patrols and run, you know, probably anywhere between, like, 6 and 8 missions before you hit endgame, you can be 20 before endgame. And let me tell you, being 20 with some powerful ass light before you take on Gaul, especially if you're doing that by yourself, that would make that last fight a little bit easier. Because the last fight's not difficult, it just takes time on the campaign side. The fight with Gaul, he basically switches between the three elemental classes. So he switches between fire, arc, and void as you're fighting him. And so you then, to do the most damage, will want to switch to weapons that do the corresponding damage, the corresponding elemental damage. So you'll want to have a fairly strong arc weapon, a fairly strong fire weapon, and a fairly strong void weapon. Preferably one that has high impact and does nice damage, but that reloads quickly, because Gaul does move quickly in the air. And you will have adds, little NPCs, that he spawns throughout the fight to help him by taking your focus off of him. And so it just makes the fight really tedious, because you constantly have to be moving around the map. The map is pretty large. He's switching elementals all the time. And you don't have to switch elementals, but if you have a strong-ass kinetic weapon, then you can just, you know, stay and shoot until you're about to die and then duck for cover. Ads will search you out, but it's a tedious fight. It's not a difficult
fight. Got it.
So by myself, I think it took me like 8 to 10 minutes to actually complete the Gaul fight, because I really didn't have my light strong enough as I needed to. But once you wipe him out, you get a really nice end cinematic. Ties the whole story nice back together. And everybody ends up getting their light back, and you see, like, this ring of the light permeating from the Traveler throughout the universe, and it ends up waking up something out in the universe, because you see it hit these ships, and then all of a sudden a light turns on in all of them, and they start to move. And so I'm fairly sure that that's the start of something else is coming, and it's either what's behind the raid, or it's going to be what's going to be behind the expansion. Because, you know, they always bring more aliens when they bring the expansions.
Yep, that's right.
I've spent the time since we last talked actually getting through Endgame, which I really enjoyed the story all the way through and the characters that I met all the way through, and the different additional adventures and other modes of play to go through. Like, there's constantly something to do on any planet you drop in on, with the exception of the Traveler, because that's your marketplace. So the Traveler is now basically the tower. So that's where all of the Vanguard are, the Gunsmith is, Rahul's back, and random number Jesus still hates me. His light does not shine upon me.
I wonder now when I go in and I do that, if I will, because I always seem to, I seem to be very lucky. He seemed to like to give me stuff.
You do, but you won't see Rahul until you actually get to endgame.
Right.
And so there is an Engram lady on the farm, but you won't encounter, unless you're far better than me or you're far luckier than I, a couple of Engrams early on that need to be decoded. Because most of the blue Engrams that pop through public events and the key targets that you track down and the different adventures that you go on, they automatically decode. So most engrams will automatically decode. So right then and there, you'll know what weapon or piece of armor you're going to get. But there are a few that do need to be decoded, and those you have to take to either Taryn, that's her name, or Rahul if you're at endgame. I think I've gone to Rahul like 3 times since I've been in endgame, and I went to Taryn once just because I was like, I want to see what Taryn will give me. It's no different. So I have no better luck with one or the other. I will say that after endgame, it almost feels like, I'm going to say almost feels like exotic engrams, I don't want to say are cheap, but they do pop way more often than the previous Destiny game, which I like. Like, I've had 5 exotic engrams pop out of running strikes and public events, which is awesome. And depending upon where you are in your game, they pop with anywhere between 20 to 40 light above where you're at. So I got my first exotic engram actually when I was at level like 9 or 10. And so most of the gear that I had at that point was like 60 and 70 in light. And I got a chest for my hunter at 105, which was awesome. And I was like, I have an exotic chest that I can't even wear until I'm 2 levels higher than what I am now. But that's awesome that it popped this early, because I'd never had an exotic or even a legendary that I recall pop in campaign in Destiny 1. The rewards feel better. You feel better because
I'm trying to think. I think
everything you do gives you stuff. It gives you glimmer. It gives you a weapon. And even if it's a weapon that's not as strong as what you're currently handling, you can dismantle it for gun parts. Now, in order to prestige and get reputation with the gunsmith, you just have to dismantle guns. Oh. And then once you prestige that bar, he'll give you a legendary engram that right then and there you can decode, and Bob's your uncle, you'll get some legendary gunnage. One time my legendary actually popped me an exotic, and I was like, what the hell just happened? And I got this very interesting exotic auto rifle that was kinetic. So I now have at least one exotic in every weapon category.
Nice.
In this game, the way that it's set up, starting from 0 and running to 20 and being able to play with your friends pretty quickly, while it may not necessarily be in strikes and raids, you'll be able to, within a week of starting off the game, be at endgame plus level. So you'll be able to do adventures and high value targets and public events and probably decent strikes, because the strike playlist is available easily within a week. So I don't think that that's a hindrance for anybody. And, you know, for a lot of the college students, hey, you've got holiday breaks coming up soon, kid, so you'll be fine. And there's a couple of games in between now and holiday anyway, so Cuphead, I see you. Also Fractured Butthole.
What a great segue.
Right? It's like I know what I'm doing.
Right?
So I'm going to let you start talking about this one, because I talked my butt off about
that. Well, yeah, because that's going to happen. So,
as I often do.
South Park games have been awesome out of the gate. Stick of Truth was our shit for a while.
Oh my gosh. Stick of Truth.
So when they finally brought, you know, to light the second game, Fractured Butthole, well, I bet many buttholes got fractured out of sheer joy. And bad tacos, or good tacos, depending on your level of taco-age.
Well, I was just surprised, because when Matt and Trey finished and got Stick of Truth launched, like, they were quoted as saying, okay, and we did that, because we wanted to do that.
And now we're done. Do that again. I love how that came out. Because literally it's like, yeah, you thought this was probably... I'm sure they were aware that making a game was not an easy thing. But then to walk through all of that and be like, fuck, it's even harder than we ever imagined. But I bet walking out of that and seeing how well it came out and how well received it was, that, like, I bet they got inundated with, make another one, make another one, make another... So, like, I'm sure the scales tipped for several months before they decided, hey, I think we have another story for another game. Let's do this. So, but with that came Fractured Butthole. And we were all like, oh, yeah, we're all about that. Now, fast forwarding a little bit, you know, life's been kind of hard out there. Society, culture, there's a little tension. There's a lot of tension. I'm not even going to lie to you guys anymore. Because I'm sure you guys are far more aware of it than I am from where I sit. And there's a lot of dumb things being said by...
Say people on the internet.
People on the internet.
It's always people on the internet.
And, you know, and sometimes those things on the internet are trickling into real life, which is making situations really uncomfortable for people. All people. So when you finally are like, you know what, I'm ready to give up. I'm ready to, like, move to Switzerland and not be an American.
No, Switzerland's not where you want to go.
You want to just get out. Like, you've seen Get Out, and you're like, aw, shit, it's happening for real. But now it's all people and not just, you know, black people. Which, if you haven't seen Get Out,
it's all people and not just our people.
Our people. But then you get little news. You get little snippets of news on the internet, which, you know, with fake news and all that, you're not too sure. But it sounded like something that, aw, shit, someone got woke and is bringing it to our favorite medium. So there was a news story that went out that said that South Park's The Fractured Butthole's difficulty slider changes your character's color of skin depending on the difficulty that you're playing at. Which, when I heard that, I was like, aw, shit. I'm all about that. Like, totally about this. And of course, you know, when they talked about exactly what it would do, it was stipulated that it wouldn't affect combat, but it would just affect every other aspect of your character's life in the game. So, if you did this thing, and you wanted to play on a really high difficulty, you were a person of color. And if you wanted, like, the maximum difficulty, you were, like, midnight black. Like, off the continent black. And apparently your interactions with people in South Park would not necessarily be, you know, nice, a little difficult, having to navigate those conversations. Depending on how your fights went, you may get less currency to buy shit. So, like, they were making this really big, poignant statement, this social statement, or at least that's what many people thought, and we're applauding them for taking a risk with this, but knowing that something needed to be addressed and how else to do it, but in a platform that many people will access, and people would have
to be the character creator of the game.
Right.
But
we found out it's not true.
It's just a joke. So changing the color of your character in the game to black is not going to actually increase the difficulty. It's just a line for Cartman, which makes sense because Cartman's the one who walks you through your character designer. And so in Cartman's mind, yes, being black would make everything very difficult. I still think that it's great social commentary, but I do think that, you know, it does make sense to not have that be an actual game mechanic, because the other side of that conversation is, though, you have a character creator, and more times than not, people want to create a character that looks like them in some way.
Right,
and
so then you'd be handicapping all of your POCs.
All the black people.
all your POC people.
All the POC like, people I
just,
will be like,
I just want my character to look like me, and now she, like, makes no money.
Right.
She can't do nothing.
So then you actually are now forcing me to be white in order to make all the money and actually have an enjoyable experience.
Which
so
are just reinforcing the stuff that right. I have to live
so
with
like,
every
when you
day.
Think it all the way through, of course it can't really actually be a mechanic in the game, because all the POCs, I'm raising my hand, is one of them, would be like, guys, the fuck?
Yeah.
Turn that shit off.
Like, I'd like a patch that allows me to put on the... I'd want to call it the white privilege patch.
No. That's what I... white privilege patch.
It's like, I would like you to make the white privilege patch so that I could, as a POC, invoke white privilege.
Exactly.
And decrease
the game.
And decrease the difficulty because of my mixed white privilege. Like, that's what I would want. But
that would be funny.
But in the large scheme of things, when this first came out, I was really like, this would be great. Because you've got those players of games who are about chasing chasing that difficulty. And I think it would have been interesting. Maybe they even make it like a little thing that you can do after the game. Where, like, you can roam around the world to South Park, you know, with this, you know, POC, and just listen to how interactions would happen. Like, I would love to do, like, a blind study of, like, 12 people, maybe 25 people, who have to navigate conversations like this in Fractured Butthole, where they, you know, they're on the hardest setting and be like, wow, people really talk to me? Like, that's weird. And at the very end of it, it's revealed that you're a person of color. And it's like, holy shit.
You know, I think that it's interesting to explore. And, you know, what I found really interesting was the reactions of some of my friends and some of the colleagues and some of frankly, acquaintances that I have on various different social platforms on how they took it and commented on it. But what I took away the most was that it stirred up so many conversations that started because some like-minded people would comment on their posts and some of their friends who were not like-minded would then comment almost, you know, in complete rebuttal of what people were saying. And so these arguments that either just stayed arguments and ended with fuck your mothers or ended with some serious conversations of people presenting their point to point to point. It fostered conversation. It got people's attention and it made them talk about some things that are not necessarily comfortable and talk about them in ways that are not necessarily comfortable as well. And I thought that, you know, even when I found out that it wasn't real, that's just this one, you know, dialogue run of Cartman's, I really do appreciate that Ubisoft let it run for a week before really correcting anyone about it.
Right.
So that those conversations would and could happen. You know, if it had popped out and they immediately said, no, it doesn't actually really affect it, then you wouldn't have had, you know, the real from a place of feelings conversations and comments pop out.
Well, no, because then I think what would have happened is if they come back and quickly, you know, recanted what they said, then you'd have people like, oh my God, what are you trying to say now? Like, you don't have the balls to, like, approach this conversation. Yeah, so, like, there could have been a backlash there.
There's a sect of that, but I do think that there's also a sect of, you know, if you had seen a story and then 2 hours later found out that actually, no, that's not the case, then people would have focused more on, oh, well, that's not really a thing. But man, what would that say if it would have been a thing? You would have had a lot of people that, you know, in the belief that it was real, would not have commented about their true feelings about if it was real or not.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know, right. And so I respect UB a lot for letting that go for a few days before going, actually, guys, that's not how you select the hard difficulty. It's just a Cartman thing. It's a joke.
I would love to see, you know, somewhere down the line. Because, I mean, it's really hard. Because when you have AAA threats like that who know their swim lanes, don't want to upset their, you know, their income and their value and all of that. But, you know, they sit in such a prominent place that they could really, like, very much like this, you know, by letting it exist and letting people, whether educated or not, try to broker these, you know, these places to have these conversations. But it'd be great for somewhere in big game land for someone to be like, hey guys, we are completely comfortable and could completely take a risk, and it'd be lovely if we said something.
Well,
with
our
power.
That we're getting closer and closer to doing that. You know, it is a scary thing to do.
It absolutely is.
You have, you know, as a business that at the end of the day is creating product to sell, you don't want to necessarily alienate.
You don't want to burn bridges.
Customer base.
You don't
it's not even about burning bridges. Businesses don't care about burning bridges. Businesses care about depleting their consumer base. Okay, because you can burn a bridge but still be profitable. You piss off enough of a customer base, you're
and those
not
wallets shut, and those downloads stop downloading, and people stop caring enough.
And then companies start shuttering. So, you know, I think that we're getting closer and closer to a AAA game and a big publisher coming forward with a game that is very much a commentary on what's going on in the North American
climate. Like Jordan Peele, you need to make a Get Out video game. But not call it Get Out. But do a PT, but like make it Get Out.
Stop.
No, for real though, bro. Wouldn't you play that?
No, I won't watch Get Out.
You're killing me.
Don't get me wrong. I'm gonna buy it because I support.
You should totally
Jordan's
watch
thing,
it.
But look, for a couple of reasons. One, I don't do horror movies.
It's not that.
And I don't care anywhere that you slice it. The focus of what that movie is a horrifying topic to me. That is a horror movie.
Okay. That's okay. One. Two. Right?
And two, it's going to make me look at some of my allies a little bit differently.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And I don't want to be in that space right now.
It was awkward. I literally, after I saw the movie, I was like, husband, I cannot sleep with you tonight in solidarity for my people.
That's not a space I want to be in right now.
So it was weird.
Why I'm abstaining. I'm going to buy the movie because I support Jordan Peele. And I do think, you know, from every review that I've read of it, it's a fantastic movie.
It is.
And I support that, but I'm not ready to watch that yet.
So I recommend it to everybody. I've been sprinkling it all over my work office. And I was like, make sure that you're in a safe space when you watch this movie. And I'm like, and I say this, I'm like, if you walk away from this movie feeling really bad, then the movie has served its purpose. And literally, I think 4 or 5 people came to me and they're like, I'm sorry. And like, I'm like, you did nothing to me. But
look, 40 acres and a mule. Just, what's up?
But it's just like... It's a pretty interesting way.
We're just in an interesting space. You're already seeing more and more places, entertainment-wise, bring these themes and these conversations and these ideas up. Just look at Powerpuff Girls.
I know. Another great segue, bro.
Right? I'm on fire.
Oh, my God. You're on fire today.
En fuego. But Powerpuff Girls...
So glad this finally happened.
Yes.
So fucking happy.
On Cartoon Network. One, I'm glad of the rebooted reboot, but I've only been watching a couple of episodes. I've mostly been addicted to Rick and Morty of late. I'm late to the Rick and Morty show, but I binged.
Oh, God. It's so good.
So after that, I was like, I am Schwifty.
Get Schwifty. With all y'all.
Yeah, I'm definitely Schwifty.
Get Schwifty.
But I saw a article that was talking about how they were going to be announcing a new Powerpuff Girl, a fourth girl in the trio. So you had Bubbles Blossom and
Buttercup.
Buttercup. And they were announcing this fourth Powerpuff Girl. And all of the visuals kind of left her in silhouette.
Yep.
We couldn't quite, you know, see.
There was no way for you to get any indication of what she'd appear to be.
Right. Until they made the reveal, the voice of the character is done by this English singer who is a black chick and is a lesbian. I can't remember what her name is right now, and I don't have the article up in front of me. But when I saw her, she reminded me very much of a younger Estelle.
Uh-huh.
She was actually in the booth doing some recording, the photo that they showed, because she announced it on her Twitter. and she was wearing a sweatshirt of, remember back when they had that Powerpuff Yourself app where you could build yourself as a Powerpuff Girl?
Yep.
She built herself with little Afro Puffs, and that was on her shirt, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's so cute that you're, like, doing your voiceover for your Powerpuff Girl, wearing your Powerpuff Yourself, and then they revealed the character, and I was like, oh my god, she's adorable.
She's super cute.
Little, super cute little brown girl with blue hair, and, like...
Her name is Blistina, but she goes by Bliss.
Right? Like, I love everything about it, right? And so I'm all excited, and I'm just like, okay, great. This is wonderful representation. You know, because when you watch the Powerpuff Girls cartoon, there's representation all over the place for different types of people, really. And I don't think a lot of people picked up on it, but, like, the school teacher definitely has mom body, and she seems to be single. You've got the one villain that is cross-dresser or transgender.
The claws.
Right. And no one ever makes a big deal about what their steez is. It's just that you're evil, dude.
Right.
Then you've got the brains of the operation for the city, Miss Bellum, who is this super fly, super smart administrative assistant to the mayor. And the mayor is this small, bumbling, old, little white man who is just so sweet, but really just out of his depth. And nothing would really happen without his smart right hand. Like, there's just all this different stuff in these groups. You've got, you know, a gang, I can't remember what the name is, but the Lizard Boys, Gangrene Gang, okay, they're obviously different nationalities. Like, there's a lot of representation in the cartoon, but I always felt like there wasn't representation for me.
Yeah. Not no and more, now, though.
And now there is. So I'm really excited, and I'm reading some of the stuff about Bliss and... You know, I'm falling more and more in love, and then I start seeing those comments. And they start coming in droves. The one about, you know, why you can't leave things alone, why does everything have to be diverse, and why do you have to put people of color in everything? And I'm just like, why are you saying it like what? Putting people of color in this ruin it?
It's so infuriating. Like, why do we even have to address that there wasn't any representation? Like, right. Why is the standard, why is the level of normalcy this thing? When you can get on the subway and clearly see.
Like, and then other people are like, oh, well, she's not really a Powerpuff Girl. And I'm like, what do you mean she's not really a Powerpuff Girl?
Actually, she was the original, like, I guess she was part of the original experiment that the professor made for his perfect little girl. And granted, he got the concoction a little wrong, so she was a tad bit unstable. But, like, they went a great way of how to establish how she is.
Like, I legit had arguments with people. I'm just like, okay, I'm going to hold up. Because if you're going to say that she's not a real Powerpuff Girl because she's not related to the other Powerpuff Girls, none of the Powerpuff Girls are related. They're all a result of the professor's experiment. It's not like they have a mom. There's no DNA going on here, so it's not like they don't share a foundation. And then to your point, I'm like, and according to the story, she was one of the original batch.
Yep.
That was a little unstable. And then he went and perfected, and we'll talk about that, the experiment
right.
to make the batch that we knew. But, like, it really bothered me that after I've had this moment of, like, oh... Here's a great, great example of, like, a cute show that is somewhat for kids and somewhat for adults, and there's finally a hero that looks like me, or at least not just for me, but for the younger generation. Here's now a superhero girl power group, and there's a girl that looks like them.
Right.
There's so much power in that. And I don't understand the people that shit on it, other than because the standard of, like, being a hero has always looked like you, you don't understand what it's like to not have the hero look like you.
You know, not all heroes look like X.
You know, so I'm really thrilled. I'm going to do my best to support this season of Powerpuff Girls. Watch episodes. I may end up buying the season on iTunes just because I want to see the episodes. And I want, you know, the cartoon to be successful and carry on for a bit. But, you know, positive representation matters. And I don't care what you look like. Positive representation across the board matters. You know, it's one of the reasons why I was so on the fence about the conversation around the Ghost in the Shell movie. Because so many people in the Asian community were like, hey, why couldn't we get somebody that looked like us in this film adaptation of an anime? And, you know, part of me was like, well, if you look at the anime, none of the characters that are in there, as far as the team, look heavily Asian. It's because the way that the anime was designed was that people's consciousness were in different bodies, so they weren't necessarily in a body that
matched them.
Matched their original genetic composition.
Right.
And so that's why when you look at the anime, you know, Batosai looks like a big-ass German dude.
Yeah.
Not an Asian guy. So that's why I was on the fence of, like, if you go based off of what the characters look like, not what the voice actors were, but what those characters looked like, I'm sorry, that lead character did not look overtly Asian. She looked European.
Yeah, I agree.
And so if that's the case, then I don't have a problem with European-ass-looking Scarlett Johansson playing her. Yes, it was an opportunity to put...
Which I think the conversation could have absolutely should have had
this opportunity to do something different. And man, would we have been giving the studio kudos if they had. But the marketer side of me is like, look, you're already behind the eight ball because Ghost in the Shell, there's a niche audience for that movie. And if I throw in an unknown or a person of color into that, I'm going to shrink that niche probably even more. I mean, and so am I going to be able to make my money back?
I mean, whereas all, if honestly, I throw what probably would have happened is in there, they would have, people would have boycotted seeing it, and they would have just pirated it down to then shit all over it. And then no money would have been gained by the venture, which is,
you know, so there's a difference between talking about opportunity and talking about appropriation and talking about, you know, just flat out representation. And I think, you know, you're seeing more and more, at least I am, and I don't know if it's because I'm more sensitive to it now or I'm looking for it more now just because of the climate that exists, but I am picking up so much more now on the positive images of people of color in general that I'm seeing in my entertainment now that I didn't see 5 years ago. You know, we've got a Black Powerpuff Girl. The Wonder Woman movie, like, kicked ass and took names across the frickin' globe.
Jaden Smith made an anime on Netflix.
Yeah, but that anime, frankly... Okay, let's talk about a couple things. First of all, it's supposedly supposed to be a satire about anime.
Right? I have not steeled myself to watching it yet.
I can't shit on it just because Jaden's in it. I have feelings about Jaden. But you know what? Hey, let your little creative freak flag fly, okay?
Hey!
But like,
you made a thing. Good for you.
What I would say on the other side of that is if you're really interested in seeing diversity in anime, then you should check out Noir Cesar because there is some great, great manga and anime that features people of color and is made by creators who are of different races and genders. Like, that's where I'd point you. Children of Ether is where I would point you right now. You know, and the fact that Children of Ether is out there and is coming, you know, there's just a more positive representation of people of color and of women that I'm seeing in games. You know, I talked a little bit about Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, and, you know, said, you know, I myself have not gone through psychosis, but I do appreciate that there is a game that features a female lead who is going through this emotional troubling thing, and it's geared specifically with how the game plays and the audio that's in that game to try and give the player the feeling of that psychosis and that pressure of it. And I appreciate that in there. And, you know, it would have been very easy to have made just another slasher game. But the fact that they focused on, you know, doing the mocap and having this female lead and this story that unravels and is quite deep about what brought on her psychosis, you know, there's a lot of positivity that I have to say that I see in that, you know. And then on the flip side of even that, you look at the things that are coming down the pike and there's a lot more positivity and there's a lot more representation. And for me, in this stage of my life, that's increasingly important for me. Because I do enjoy all kinds of games. Like, I finished The Lost Legacy, and I absolutely loved it. I thought it was really a fantastic job. And that game is primarily a Thelma and Louise game. Like, the majority of the game is Chloe and Nadine. Sam gets thrown in there in the back end, but it's really these two. Yeah, I know. I realized I was trying to keep going so that you wouldn't pick up on it.
Nope, totally caught that in the butt.
Sorry.
But I'm an adult.
The main characters of the game are these two independent, strong, smart women. And while you control Chloe the entirety of the game, Nadine is equally as important in the game. And that's important. You know, I can count on one hand the non-stripper, non-thief, black female characters in a game that I remember in the last 10 years. That's a problem. Because a big chunk of the gaming community is made up of people of color. And half, if not a little bit more than half, if you want to throw casual games into the mix, if you do, then more than half of the gaming community is female. And you're not represented. And I'm not saying that, like, I don't want to play main heroes, because y'all have heard us go on at length about Nathan Drake.
Yep, and Joel from Last of Us.
And I love those characters. I can't wait for Last of Us 2. And I'm so excited to play that game. And not because I think I'm going to play Ellie more than anything, although I'm pretty sure that you will. But I love the character of Joel, and going through his story and his experience in Last of Us really touched me. Same thing when I played Heavy Rain, which was a male character. Same thing when I played...
Well, I mean, Heavy Rain, Uncharted. You played mostly male characters, but you did also play, like... You played, like, one female in Heavy Rain.
Yeah, but I fucked up and I got her killed.
Yeah.
Because of my six-axis controller.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't turn the motion thing, and when I was shaking it, she wouldn't get off the table.
Ugh.
And so she died.
I feel really bad for her, because if that's not the way she gets taken out, the ways she can are just as bad. And then the DLC, she's literally being stalked by, like, a killer. But I got taken out
before I even got to get laid.
It's really not all that great.
I know, but I felt,
like,
bad.
It's a pity fuck, because you're sad, and she could have been late,
and then I felt bad that I was the reason why she died without getting any.
But I mean, like, it wasn't like, oh man, we have connected on this level and we have to, like, physically join. It's literally like, I'm really sad and feel empty. I'm really sad and feel empty. This may help. Nope, it didn't. Okay, never talk again. And that's right. Totally what happens.
I know, but I felt bad because I felt like, oh man, you probably hadn't gotten any in years because of all the, you know, psycho things that were going on in your head. And I was your one chance of getting some digital booty. And I failed you, Morgan. I failed you. You got no digital booty. You just died on that dude's table. So anyway,
that representation dude got you.
Matters, and it's not because of anything other than it just means a lot for people to be able to identify on multiple levels with a heroic character. It just does. You know, I keep seeing more and more of it happen, and it's not, like, overtly, like, in your face, beat you down with it, but it's been happening more and more over the last few years. You know, Mirror's Edge, Portal, like, and people lost their shit for a while when they found out that Shell was a chick in Portal, because everybody just assumed they were playing a dude.
Once again, why are we stipulating, why is there this hard line stipulation that the normal is white and
all,
male?
All I'm saying is that the standard is shifting. It hasn't shifted, but it's shifting. And I think you're going to see more and more games that are going to be either focus more on character creation so that you, as the player, can control what the character looks like, and then you can move on from there. And if not, you're probably going to see some franchises think about their lead characters a little bit deeper before they go to market.
Probably. Don't expect that from Rockstar, guys. Just, I know everyone's probably thinking in the back of their mind, oh man, a female lead, it won't happen.
No.
The structure of their narrative would
no.
There's no...
No.
I don't want to say there isn't a way, because there is one, but...
Well, I mean, absolutely, because if Rockstar just embraced it and, you know, went straight for having cartels or things like that, there's a lot of conglomerates and cartels around the globe that do have female leaders, so
yes,
you could,
but
you could
I don't,
do that. But
don't think...
I don't expect it from Team Rockstar.
No.
I just don't.
And if that
but Yubi's
does,
already there, Yubi's
if that
there.
Was to happen, it I don't believe it would happen during the phase that we are playing games. It'd be something that we saw on the end of our gaming life or journey or whatever.
Probably. Speaking of end of game journey,
oh my god! Speaking journey. Of probably the end of somebody's career,
it's
maybe
not.
I
wish,
know,
but it's not. It's not even close.
So run this to ground, because I cannot talk about this without getting worked up and then mad.
Well,
and then
here's
sad.
The thing. I'm gonna keep this one short for you. So I'm glad that, you know, we were able to talk more in depth about the positive side of representation.
But we can't neglect the negative. We can't do that, because if you don't give
it's irresponsible. So, yes, guys, we're about to talk about PewDiePie. And I, you know what? If you feel in any way, shape, or form that PewDiePie is awesome and is never wrong for any of the things that he does and says,
then you stop listening to us right now.
You can stop listening to this podcast.
You know what?
But
pause.
I don't think that anybody that subscribes to this podcast feels that way, because they like us. So, but we're going to talk about the PewDiePie situation, because I do think that it speaks a lot to representation in games, but it also speaks a lot to just the culture within gaming in general.
And I wouldn't even say that. I'd also talk about,
no,
you know, the culture
does.
And
it
social
does.
Media
no.
as well, though. And the power of being in the social media public eye.
But the social media piece is only a piece of it. Because even if he wasn't broadcasting the game, if he was just playing multiplayer with a bunch of friends, there's no way that you could tell me that that word wouldn't have come out. So it has nothing to do necessarily with I was on for a stream. It's just something that comes out. And I have played multiple games online with people where I've heard that and worse, and nobody was streaming. We were just online. So that really is about a piece of the culture. And what I'm going to get to is this. So if you haven't heard, a couple of weeks ago now, PewDiePie, who is the number one game streamer on YouTube. Okay, that's the undeniable thing. He's got over 57 million subscribers to his YouTube channel. That is a large, captured audience. Okay?
Yep.
He's the number
and
one
now with the algorithm
video game
shift,
YouTuber.
And he's still sitting with that, because it's all about watch time currently right now. It's how long someone actually sits through your video that determines your popularity. And
okay.
And
so he's the number one streamer. Was playing some and streaming.
I think he was playing
Player Unknown's Battlegrounds.
Yeah.
And was attempting to kill this dude and was doing very shittily at it. So let's be very clear. It wasn't that this guy was cheating or whatever. It was that Pewds didn't have the skills to, like, one-shot kill this dude and was getting frustrated in the fact that he couldn't take this guy down. And Colt said, what a effing N-word, with the hard R at the end. So not the rapper G-A.
Which is still not acceptable, guys.
Okay, it's not, and we've had that conversation. I'm not going to have that conversation right now. But straight up, clear as be day, said, what an effing N-word.
Yep.
Had the look of recognition on his face of what like, he just did.
You know.
Because he realized he was streaming and wasn't just in the group of people. And, you know, finished out the match and whatever. And immediately,
it was like, oh, guys, not in a bad way. Like, not.
Okay.
Not.
Immediately. You know. Now, immediately knew he was in the wrong. And some other people who were capturing this same game, because there's multiple people playing PubGub. There's, like, what, 32 that have dropped in a map?
And I think so,
King
yeah.
of the Mountain? Yeah, it's 32. And if you get it, if they all die, and you kill some of them, that's cool. But if they all die and you survive,
you win.
You win. Winning winner, chicken dinner. You take number one. Okay? So, somebody else who was in the same group recorded it and said, hey, all you people who idolize PewDiePie, you really shouldn't because he's kind of a dick. And if you thought that anti-Semitic thing that he apologized for a few months ago was just an isolated incident, which if you've ever watched any of his older videos on his stream, you know isn't. Here's just a quick reminder that, like, no. And the internet kind of blew up. Because the people who are just like, oh, it's just social justice warriors and snowflakes not, you know, respecting this guy's freedom of speech, or it's just people who, you know, need to get over the fact that, you know, it's just words, or my favorite, well, black people use it, so anybody can use it because, you know, no words are, you know, off the table. No. I constantly say that freedom of speech does not equate to freedom from repercussion. And what I mean by that is you can say a lot of things. In many countries, not all, because not all countries have the freedom of speech or the freedom to practice religion of your choosing, but in many countries, you can say a lot of things. But that doesn't mean that just because you have the right to say them,
that you're absolved that from any consequence of what happens when
correct.
You do.
Correct. Okay. I can say all kinds of horrible things, if I want to, about political leaders. That does not necessarily mean that because I have the right to say those things, that when I do, people who disagree with me aren't going to try to physically do me harm. And by my saying them to these things to them, I am inciting them to do me physical harm. Okay? Free speech just means that you can say these things and you can rest assured that for just the sheer nature of saying those things,
you will not get persecuted for that.
You will not be put into jail for that. Okay? So I can say that my senator is a wanker and likes to eat dick. I can say that. And the cops can't put me in jail for just saying that. I can put it out on the web. I can put it out just on postcards if I want to. I can do that. But that doesn't mean that that public figure can't sue me for defamation.
Yep.
They can. And I can say, well, I was exercising my free speech. And because they are a public figure, they're open to that stuff. And more times than not, I'll probably win that case. But it still doesn't stop them from having the right to sue me, which means we still got to go to court. I still got to pay a lawyer, though it's money coming out of my pocket. Court time means I could lose my job.
And they would throw a lot of money at that to make that a living hell. And if they happen to not get you in one fashion, they go through the other court to get you another way.
Right. So. And if I'm having to make all these court dates, my job may say, hey, you're never here.
You're a liability.
I could lose my job. Okay? So You have freedom of speech. I'm not saying that anybody shouldn't be able to say something that they want to say. I curse a lot. A lot. Especially on this podcast. But that doesn't mean that somebody couldn't contact me and be like, look, I let my kid listen to your podcast. Well, you really shouldn't because it tagged it explicit because we use naughty language. And now every other word out of their mouth is fuck this, fuck that, and also fuck your mother. And
titties. Now he says titties all the time.
It just, and I, it's really inappropriate. He says
he's seven.
There is no such thing as freedom from repercussion. From what you say. Okay? And I could debate all kinds of things, but at the end of the day, I am not a fan of PewDiePie. And I don't necessarily just whole hog knock anybody who is. Okay? For a chunk of his videos that I've seen, because when I was first looking at, you know, YouTubers, I looked at PewDiePie stuff. And there were some things that I really laughed at. And I thought, wow, this guy is really funny. I like his reactions and things. But as I started watching more and more, I just realized that, you know, some things weren't necessarily very positive. They weren't fun, you know, for me to watch in long term. So ultimately, I decided, meh, not for me, not so much. I have no problem with anybody that enjoys watching PewDiePie play games. More times than not, just over-the-top stuff. But I will say that when I was very young, our moms told me one time, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen PewDiePie on stream say racist shit.
Anti-Semitic. I've seen him
anti-Semitic shit. He dropped the R word. I want to say it was a couple of days, but it might have only been one real full
Wait,
day.
Wait, the R, the impaired, like...
No, G-G-E-R. I mean, yeah, I'm...
You said R-word.
Sorry.
You meant N-word.
Yeah, I meant N-word.
So I was like, he said the R-word too? I actually wouldn't be surprised.
I don't know that. And so I'm not going to say yes, but...
Okay.
But... The N-word with the R on the end.
Okay.
Okay.
The hard R.
The hard R. And a couple of days after everything happened, he released an apology video and said it was stupid and I was dumb and I was stupid. And I know that words have consequences and I really need to work on this for myself because, you know, that word's not part of my vocabulary. But, you know, I just wanted to say the worst thing I could think of in the moment and that's what came to my mind. And I'm just like... This is not an absolution, because if the worst possible thing on the planet you could think of to say in the moment was that word, then what you're telling me is the worst possible thing that you could think of in the world is that.
Right.
Is my people, because that's what that word is used for. And you can't knock it away for... Well, it's not a big thing in my culture, and I'm not aware of it. Everyone on the planet is aware of that word and its significance, because right. It is part of the founding of this country. So I don't buy the apology, and I don't buy that it's an isolated incident, because...
It's not, because he's already nearly fell in that pithole again.
Because in response to all of this, the... creators of the game Firewatch, which is a phenomenal game, said, you know what? The developers were like, we're done and we don't want this guy streaming our game, because he had done one game. And the lead developer was like, and it's this really nasty catch-22, because we want big YouTubers sharing our game so that we get out in front of a bunch of people, but this is not the right kind of person attention that you want to be associated with to get that kind of attention. So they issued a DMCA takedown. And so this is the slippery slope. I don't agree with the DMCA slap. I do think that any developer, any publisher that puts out a game has the right to want to control and enforce who is actually doing Let's Play videos. Because let's be honest, Let's Play videos, which are a big chunk of what is on YouTube, and a big chunk of the content creators that are on YouTube. Let's Plays, by their definition of what you're doing, cannot be considered fair use. Okay? And therefore, people who are doing Let's Plays in the direct sense of the rights are violating the copyright because you do not own the rights to that work. So therefore, even by adding commentary, you're not creating a new work. You should not be able to do Let's Plays. But a whole lot of publishers and developers rely on big Let's Players to help get their games out in front of people, and so they don't restrict and slap infringement suits and cease and desists on a lot of Let's Players. But they could, because technically, Let's Plays do not fall under the fair rights usage. And so they won their claim, and the video had to come down. Now, I think that before the claim was actually won, PewDiePie already pulled the Firewatch video down from his YouTube channel. And I don't think that the DMCA slap is the right way to do it. I think that I can't remember what the full name of the company is, but I think that they absolutely, to scare the shit into PewDiePie, could have grabbed their legal team and just slapped him with a regular cease and desist and ask for, you know, financial retribution, because the DMCA route makes it very scary.
I think that would have been harder. Then you could be, I think that would have been harder for them to do, because it's not like this happened during his recording while playing that particular game.
No, but it is their product. They own the copyright. They own the rights. He does not. They can. Any developer, any publisher can slap anybody they want with a cease and desist for using their work without explicit written permission to do so. And see, this is where the scary part comes in. Because I understand why they went with the DMCA claim, because it's the fastest, okay, to get pulled down on YouTube. But because they won, because they're in the right, because again, by default, Let's Plays cannot be considered fair use. They don't fall under the fair use rights usage. Okay? All Let's Plays. Okay. It is simply by the grace of the publishers and the developers that they allow them, because they want the pubs. They want the views. It's easy marketing and content they don't have to create. But by using the DMCA claim in this way, it now sets a nasty little precedent, because now instead of going the cease and desist route first, publishers and developers can go the DMCA rights claim first. And where do you draw that line? Because now it's, okay, well, they specifically slapped this user on a video that wasn't the video that he did the horrible thing, but they just decided they don't want this YouTuber anymore to use their content. Well, what if I am playing a Let's Play or I review games and I don't like your game? And so in my review, I shit on your game for some mechanics that are really bad. Now a publisher can be like, we don't want that out on the internet, so we're going to claim a DMCA claim against this particular person to get this particular video pulled down.
Yep, it does set a, it sets a really ugly
that's tone. That's the slippery slope.
You're right.
And you win it, and you're always going to win it, not because, well, what they said about your game was shitty, but because they showed your game, the artwork that's in your game, the gameplay of your game, the audio that's in your game, all that stuff is rights managed and licensed. And that particular content creator did not get permission from you before creating this content to put it out there. So, yeah, it's not fair use, and they don't have the rights to do it. So, yeah, they're going to lose that suit, and that video is going to have to come down. So it's a nasty, slippery slope. And, you know, again, I do think that every developer has the right to choose, you know, if they want their content to appear created by somebody or on the channel of someone that they don't necessarily agree with, align with, or feel is good for their brand. They absolutely have that right. And I stand 110% behind that. You know, if you don't want Markiplier or a PewDiePie or Jacksepticeye for whatever reason, you know, or Jim Sterling from Jimquisition or whatever, showing off your game, streaming your game, or being associated in any way, shape, or form with your intellectual property, you have the right to say, no, not this person. But it's a scary spot to be in as a content creator. And so after the PewDiePie thing, YouTube revenue went all over the place because they changed their algorithms and they changed a lot of things and they booted a bunch of people from their higher level content creator tier. You know, they took away his YouTube Red project. He lost the Disney money. And there was a whole lot of other people that went from being the 30% per ad revenue channel to 10. And I think there's going to be another algorithm shakeup again because this dude just can't watch his mouth.
Yep, another adpocalypse is going to happen.
And it's a shame because the smaller guys, like us, are going to feel it. Like, we got booted out of the monetization group after the last ad shakeup because we don't have enough subscribers on our YouTube channel. So subscribe to our YouTube channel. We've got 3 Overcooked videos out there now. 4th one's coming this week, so watch them. Like a lot. Like so many. Just keep watching them. And we'll have more videos coming soon. I just think that, again, it speaks to more of the nature of the community online. The online gamer, the anonymity of online gaming empowers people in a way to, I almost want to say, be the dumbest version of themselves. And I'm a victim of that, too. I say some really dumb shit when I am on mic with my friends playing games. Stuff that I would not say if those same people were in the same room with me doing the same activity. I think that's just because I know that I'm like in my space and I'm by myself. So like if anybody doesn't like it, the worst case scenario is they're going to mute themselves or they're going to jump off the game or I'll jump off the game and like 3 days later we'll jump back in and nobody will remember it and we're moved on because life moves on. But like I myself, and I own that, I say some real dumb shit. Things that I would not say to people's faces when I'm playing online. And I'm a chick. And I'm black. But never the hard R.
Never the hard R.
Never the R word. Never any slang for someone being of a different sexual orientation. And it's not that those words are not in my lexicon, because they are. I grew up in the 80s and the 90s. We said some dumb shit in the 80s and the 90s. And I've worked hard so that those words are not coming flying out of my mouth when I get really mad. Mostly, I create really, really horrible both gibberish and then curse word phrases. And sometimes I insert your mom in there somewhere.
Hey-o.
When I'm mad. But never those other words, because I know what they mean to so many people. And I know that I am responsible, especially if I'm playing a game online with other people, that if they come flying out of my mouth, I am responsible for the fallout. As much as representation matters, your actions matter. So fuck PewDiePie. That's all I got to say.
Well,
and I guess that's the point to really wrap it up, because we're out of time. And I mean, I don't know if you have any better way to wrap this up.
No.
Yeah, no, I got nothing.
Sometimes you gotta walk away quietly.
Sometimes you gotta walk away quietly. So if you enjoyed this podcast, make sure that you subscribe to our show. You can do that on our website, electricsisterhood.com. You can get us in iTunes, either on the desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device by searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. You can also get our podcast in Google Play, on Stitcher Radio, on VogNetwork.com. New episodes go out every single week. We hope that you'll subscribe, leave us a review, share us with your friends and your family, and help us grow the Esh community. You can interact with us on so many different channels. You can interact with us on Instagram. We are flooding Instagram with a whole bunch of content. Facebook's being kind of dickish to us right now and not letting us post as much stuff as we'd like to post. Because, surprise, surprise, not a lot of comments, likes, or shares on that stuff, guys. So they've reduced what we can share there. So we've moved a big chunk of stuff over to Instagram. So just hit us up, follow us on Instagram for a bunch of quotes and rejected titles and some other fun visual stuff. And we've even got some videos going on over there. So that's Instagram.com/ESH News, similar to our Twitter, Twitter.com/ESH News. But definitely follow us on Instagram, like our stuff. So get to double tapping. Like, so much double tapping needs to happen. If you enjoy what it is that we do, both on the site and in the podcast, then make sure that you check out all the other great content that everybody in the network is making. And that's everything from the No Borders, No Race podcast hosted by KBD over at b3crew.com. Definitely make sure that you bookmark that site and you check out that show. It's bi-weekly right now for a little bit, but it'll be back to weekly soon. Definitely make sure that you check that out. Be sure on Wednesdays to check out our homie, HamsterMan2049, streaming live on Twitch, twitch.tv/HamsterMan2049. All different kinds of great stuff being streamed. I love watching his streams whenever I can because Ben plays new and old games. So make sure that you check the stream out. Wednesdays, 9 Eastern, you get the link right on our Facebook page. You can also check out his site, smashedrook.com. My homie, your homie, everybody's homie, Phil the Issues Guy with Phil's Recap and Review. The most enjoyable recap show on YouTube. So make sure that you subscribe, turn on the notifications. You will absolutely love Phil's Recaps. If you're into Westworld, Sopranos, Game of Thrones, Better Call Saul, hilariousness, just subscribe. And last but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, giving you the stuff that nerds crave, from comic books, anime, manga, and more. If it's nerdy, they're talking about it over at nerdcrave.com. So with that, I'm going to wrap up this podcast. I promise next week it won't be as deep unless, you know, the world sucks. But I'm hopeful because, hey, by next week I should have run at least the Nightfall. So, as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And until next time, folks,
titties.